Concern is growing around the world as the number of cases of the COVID-19 virus continues to increase. There are now 13 people in hospital here receiving treatment for the illness. The Department of Health confirmed last night that the 13 includes a man who had been receiving medical care in Cork University Hospital for a number of days before testing positive for the virus. Now, some 60 staff at the hospital who had close contact with that patient have been told to self-isolate. With me in studio, Kim Roberts, Assistant Professor and Lead of the Virology Research Group in Trinity College Dublin, and also here Dr. Carmen Regan, Consultant Obstetrician in the Coombe Maternity Hospital and also from the RCSI. And on the line, I am joined by Dr. Fergal Hickey, Consultant in Emergency Medicine at Sligo University Hospital. Good morning to you all. First of all, to you, Fergal Hickey, I know you're some distance from Cork, but I'd imagine it's the last thing that a hospital needs is for 60 people who were in contact with a patient in ED to be stood down and put into quarantine.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that for us is the potential nightmare scenario, that up to now we were getting patients who we were alerted to and they were going through a very clear process, which meant that we could isolate them, we could protect the staff that were going to deal with them, do their testing and take it from there. The problem with this particular patient is he seems to have presented with a pneumonia, and pneumonia is quite a common presentation to emergency departments in the country, and therefore we're not in a position to be able to be forewarned about pneumonias turning up in the emergency department, and therefore by the time that this diagnosis is made, patients will have been in the department for an extended period of time, will have interacted with a variety of nursing and medical staff, potentially had x-rays, and then if they turn out to be positive, then all of those staff are potentially at risk, as well as the patients that were in the emergency department at the time, particularly as emergency departments are as overcrowded as you're aware they are.
Yes, and what impact do you think this is going to have on emergency departments across the country?
It's going to have a worrying impact because at the best of times, we're short of space. We've, relatively speaking, too many patients for the spaces that they're occupying. And, you know, we have a limited number of staff, and if we're having to stand those staff down, then we're losing that expertise. Now, you might think you can transfer nurses from another part of the hospital or transfer doctors from another part of the hospital, but it needs to be borne in mind that these are specialist clinicians. People who work in emergency departments have particular skills and expertise, and you can't just simply get that from somewhere else in the same way that you can't just suddenly start transferring large numbers of staff into an operating theatre and expect them to know what to do.
Now, we were saying at the outset, 60 staff have been asked to self-isolate, but presumably there's still a tracing and a fairly urgent one procedure going on with all the people who would have been in there as patients over the day at the relevant time.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't have the exact details because, as you'll appreciate, these things are not released into the public domain or even within my domain. But I am well aware that there is a contact tracing exercise going on. We've talked about staff, but there's also the patients involved. And of course, the reality is that the type of patient that is in an emergency department, and particularly the type of patient that's in an emergency department that is waiting for a hospital bed, they're a particularly sick group of patients. So they're typically elderly, and they've typically got underlying medical conditions. So these are the high-risk group of patients, and in many ways this is analogous to, you know, bringing a drum of petrol into a house fire from an emergency department perspective.
Quite an image that you outlined there, Dr. Hickey.
So, but I would say, Sean, that is a significant image, yes, but we need to not forget that we need to continue to do the things that people have been advised to do. So it's really important that patients who have been in any of the risk areas self-isolate themselves, and if they become symptomatic, to do what has been advised by the HSE. The advice is unchanged. It's just, unfortunately, we now have a group of patients who are outside that demographic. The other important thing to appreciate, and we've had some difficulties with this, is an occasional patient will turn up to an emergency department because they feel unwell, wanting to be tested. That's completely inappropriate. So what we need is people to understand that the test is unlikely to be positive unless you are symptomatic. And you have to be symptomatic to a level to allow the test, essentially the test measures viral load, and you have to have enough of a viral load to make the test positive. So we don't want people turning up to get tested just in case. And that's dangerous and that's unhelpful, and those people just get in the way.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, as you say, that people do those kind of things without thinking. I just see the latest news in now. We're waiting, I think it'll be mid-afternoon, before there's guidance, official guidance provided, because the various stakeholders are to meet about public events. But the people down in Youghal who run their parade have taken a decision that they're calling it off. I mean, is that the kind of thing, Fergal Hickey, that you would recommend or expect to see advised?
No, but I would hope that the expert group would make a determination on that. I mean, the advice that we have received from the expert group up to this point has been absolutely perfect from the point of view that it accords with international best practice. It's not made willy-nilly. There's a detailed process of consideration. So the advice we've received and the treatment algorithms we have received have been of the highest order, and that needs to be acknowledged. But this is an important issue that they need to consider and to try and mitigate the risk. But that decision will be made based on a risk assessment of it. You know, it's easy to say we should ban all public gatherings, but that may or may not be justifiable, and it's important that we wait for the opinion of those that are experts in this area.
Yes, and just going back to the fact that the initial contact from the patient in Cork had to do with suspected pneumonia. Now, does this mean then that as a result of that particular experience, all patients who present to an emergency department with suspected pneumonia, they would actually have to be tested for the coronavirus now?
So the change in the algorithm suggests that that now needs to happen. But the practicalities of that are going to be enormously difficult. I mean, patients can present unwell for a variety of reasons, and it may only become apparent that they have a pneumonia at a later stage of their care. So they, at that stage, they will have been in the emergency department for a significant period of time undergoing the normal testing for the condition that has them unwell. So this poses a major challenge to us. We don't, generally speaking, have the capacity to isolate people from the front door who might have pneumonia. It may be obvious clinically that they have a pneumonia. It may be possible to isolate those. But for many patients, their pneumonia may not be that obvious until it's proven subsequently by a chest x-ray or some other test result.
Yes, and we've seen some footage from abroad, Dr. Hickey, where, if you like, marquees or tents have been established or set up in car parks, you know, away from the hospital proper, where but there's some triaging going on now. Is that something that you would recommend happen here?
I think that needs to certainly be considered. I mean, we need to try and separate, essentially, those patients who have coronavirus, who have the capacity, who are relatively well, or are well, from the group of patients in emergency departments who will be very vulnerable to getting it. So any way that actually moves the testing as close to the patient as possible, that has already started. As you'll be aware, the National Ambulance Service are testing people in certain areas in their home who meet certain criteria, and that has been a help. But what we don't want is to mix coronavirus patients with vulnerable patients of the kind that are in emergency departments. Now, there will be a proportion of those with coronavirus, like this unfortunate man in Cork, who are sick enough that they need significant hospital input and often critical care. And we will have difficulties when that arises.
Okay, Dr. Fergal Hickey, we'll let you go back because obviously you've got patients to attend to there in Sligo. Thank you indeed. Consultant in emergency medicine, Dr. Fergal Hickey. Now, with me in studio, as I say, Dr. Carmen Regan, consultant senior lecturer at the RCSI and also somebody who works at the COOM. I know you're not representing the COOM here today, but you've written a piece in today's Irish Independent and you're not given to, if I like, going public on things, but you have a particular concern about flights from Italy.
Yeah, thanks, Sean. Actually, I'm quite outside my comfort zone talking to the public, but I think it's really important. I've been following, I suppose, the rise of this epidemic since the building of a new hospital in Wuhan, which was a phenomenal thing to do and which they had to do. I think what we're seeing is a rapidly emerging epidemic and we are responding to that. My big concern is that when it becomes established, and it will become established in our country, that our health system will rapidly become overburdened and unable to sustain the problem. And I suppose I don't wish to create panic. That's not what I do in my job. But I think I'm pretty realistic about this. And so I do feel very strongly about, first of all, the containment measures that we're doing. And I think the article that I wrote highlighted that. There has been a lot of talk about international travel and banning flights. And I think the government are following WHO recommendations, which are that travel measures, essentially banning flights, is not something that they would recommend based on evidence. However, they do say that travel measures which significantly interfere with international traffic may only be justified at the beginning of an outbreak, as they may allow countries to gain time, even if only for a few days, to rapidly implement effective preparedness measures. And such measures must be based on a careful risk assessment, etc., and be proportionate. Now, all of the cases that have come in, the index cases have come in to Ireland, have come from northern Italy. We have direct flights from northern Italy every day, several, many flights. We are recommending to people not to travel to these areas, but we are allowing them back. And we're not quarantining them, we're not recommending self-isolation. And as a result of that, I believe we have a gathering number of cases. And it doesn't give me any comfort when every evening we hear the cases came from northern Italy, and this is what we expect.
Except for the one that causes most worry, which is the one in Cork. That has not been traced. I mean, that was somebody who is not known to have had contact with somebody who was in northern Italy or who was there himself.
So that's the beginning of the next phase, which is person-to-person contact within the population, which is what we're seeing. So we are already, I suppose, outside of the containment phase. But I do think that we can't talk about those two things in isolation. The flights that are still coming in will still bring in cases, and that will create a burden of contact tracing, which you can see will become a stretch for our public health people.
And do you think that the moment will come when it just won't be possible or relevant to continue with contact tracing?
The WHO says that the most important part of managing this is to slow down the emergence of the cases into the population. And that is because contact tracing will become impossible. The health system will not be able to cope. If we look at Wuhan, they had to build extra hospitals to deal with the problem. You know, and today there are no new cases in Hubei province, which is phenomenal. But look at the attrition in the interval. We have an opportunity. We have the experience of China. We know what's coming down the tracks, and we need to preempt that. And I do believe we need to look outside of the recommendations and look at other countries.
Do you have particular concerns as an obstetrician for the impact on pregnant women?
Absolutely. And the reason for that is that we know that 80% of people will be asymptomatic. There's a lot of asymptomatic infections occurring. We look after very healthy women. But if Pregnant women are no more likely to get the condition, but they will get the condition in the same way as other people. So say take 10 people get the infection, then two of those will be severely infected. They may need, and that means hospital admission for a prolonged period of time. It means oxygenation. In our setting, it means delivery usually because the baby is often affected. There may be fetal distress or preterm delivery. We don't have the facilities to deal with even 2 to 3 patients in any of the big maternity hospitals. You know, and then we're talking about if you have 20 patients, one of those may need to be ventilated. The stay for these patients in hospital is a very long period of time. And this is a healthy group of women. The other part that's very difficult is that we have numerous contacts with these women. They come for antenatal visits, and I'm just talking about pregnancy. They're asymptomatic. We're already coming across a lot of women who present to the hospital and in the course of conversation mention that they've been to northern Italy, you know, and they will not develop the disease or maybe is symptomatic for a number of days prior to us becoming aware of them. It will become impossible to prevent outbreaks unless we deal with them at the source. And I do think we need to slow it down. We're not going to stop it, Sean.
We don't have anything like the track record of the Chinese in terms of building emergency facilities. But, if you know, should the government be taking over buildings and preparing them to deal with the emergency that looks like it's coming our way?
I think so. I think the difficulty we have with the decisions around what's happening are in relation to travel is the health economic modelling. But I honestly don't know that we have a whole lot of time for that at the present. I think we should suspend flights and look at what's happening. I would like to mention that Taiwan is a very good case in point. It's an island very close to the outbreaks in China and in Japan, and it saw this disease coming down the tracks. It took early effective measures. It stopped flights from Wuhan. It reduced flights from mainland China. It did things like hand sanitation at public places, temperature checking, and they have 47 cases and one death. That's incredible. And that's because they had experience of SARS 17 years ago, where they had a very large number of deaths in their population. We need to look outside and look at what's happening, and it is a tsunami coming at us. I really do believe that we do need to take extreme measures, even if for a short time, together to know what's happening. We've seen 7 cases last night. Like that is...
Yes, and 7 new ones. And no doubt there will be more before this day is out and through the weekend and so forth. I mean, why stop at banning flights from Italy? I mean, obviously that is the most critical area people are coming from. But is there a case from the way you're looking at it for effectively literally turning us into an island in terms of access?
I suppose that would be a very drastic measure. Economic experts will tell you that our GDP will fall to 30%. That becomes a health versus economic argument. And I think you know where that would go.
Yeah, I just see a text from a listener saying, Sean, there are 5 flights coming into Dublin Airport today from Milan. Already there are groups of young Italians in the city centre who have arrived early. This is madness, says Janet in Blackrock. Now, we wouldn't want those young Italians, or anybody else for that matter, to be abused or treated badly, though, when they're here.
But, you know, I was very impressed with the Minister Harris's move to block, to stop the rugby match, which was to happen this weekend. But what they didn't do is look outside of that pragmatism. Many of the fans who booked flights and booked accommodation into Dublin this weekend are still coming. I spoke with Ailish O'Regan of The Independent last night, who commented that she saw supporters on O'Connell Street Bridge. Now, I don't have comfort around that. I don't think we're safe because we're not in a stadium. So why take a partial measure and not make it a complete measure, even if for a weekend?
Yeah, and if I can turn to you, Kim Roberts, Assistant Professor of Virology at Trinity College. First of all, part of that university campus has been shut down or at least confined because of a suspected case. Can you enlighten us more?
Unfortunately not, no. I'm sure you probably know more than I do.
OK, well, look, as I say, you're an expert in viruses. Just remind us again how this COVID-19 virus affects the body.
So for the vast majority of people, this virus will cause mild symptoms. The characteristic symptoms are a fever and a dry cough. There are a few other symptoms, but really kind of... a runny nose or a stuffed nose that we'd normally associate with cold viruses doesn't really occur, only in about 5% of people. So then what happens is, for the vast majority of people, the immune system will kick in and they'll clear the virus. And they might not even recognise that they've been ill. That's one of the problems with community transmission. For a small proportion of people, for about 20% of people, especially if they have other health problems and their immune response is already very active, then what can happen is their immune response goes in overdrive, and that can cause damage to the body. So damage to the lungs, damage to the heart, and elsewhere. And so it's those symptoms that have to be managed when these people are in hospital.
And what about the situation that arose in Cork? It appeared that what was regarded as a case of pneumonia turned out to be coronavirus. Now, what are your thoughts on that?
So I think this is what we have been expecting. This is the pattern that has been seen in many countries around the world. And we do need to take notice of these people coming in with pneumonia. The problem that we have is we don't know how much community transmission is taking place.
And just explain community transmission.
So community transmission is when there isn't a direct link to a hotspot area such as Northern Italy. And that community transmission might be started by somebody returning from their holiday in Italy. They feel fine. The advice is, if you feel fine, just carry on with your day as normal. So they don't have symptoms or incredibly mild symptoms. They don't think twice, which is absolutely right. Go to work and carry on their normal lives. At some point, they'll meet somebody where the virus is able to transmit from that first person to the second person. If that person is fit and healthy, they don't think twice. They might get a bit of a cough, but they've not been to Northern Italy, so it's not something to particularly worry about. And then they can pass on the virus to somebody else. And it takes about 7 days for each of those transmission events to occur. And what we can then get is that we, and I should also say that on average, each infected person will infect two more people. So you can see how the numbers can build quite quickly. If we can learn from other countries, we can get a lot of information. So if we look at Italy and also what's developing in Washington State, we can see that it's taking about 7 weeks for those first silent seeding transmission events from the first seeding event to noticeable increase in pneumonia cases and people taking notice that the virus is around. And that's about 7 weeks.
And is it possible for the virus to be transmitted while it's incubating in a person?
So during that incubation period, which is about 5 days, the virus isn't transmitting.
It's not?
It's not transmitting. But as soon as the person becomes has symptoms, and they can be incredibly mild, possibly a little bit before they get symptoms, but the data for that is very, very weak, they are then transmitting the virus. So the average time between being exposed to the virus and transmitting the virus is about 7 days. So if it takes 7 weeks for the very beginnings of an epidemic to be noticed, we are somewhere along that 7 week time period. And we don't know where we are along that line because we don't have a good handle on community transmission. We could start looking at the sequence of the virus, so its genome code, and that can give us clues. That's what's being used in Washington State, in Washington State. And there's some really compelling data that is giving us great clues about how community transmission is working over there. But I think, you know, as we've heard earlier on this morning.
From Carmen, yeah.
Yeah. We have a moment here where we can make decisions and potentially change the impact of this epidemic. But the epidemic is coming and we have to act now.
And the decisions you would like to see taken?
Certainly increased monitoring and testing of anybody with pneumonia. I think it is sensible advice to get people to increase social distancing. I'm not an epidemiologist. There are so many factors in making these policy decisions that need to be taken into consideration. And as we've said, you know, there's the health versus the economics issues. But we need to know what the Department of Health has planned in terms of social distancing so that people can prepare. Are we going to close schools? Are we going to say that people should stop going to public gatherings? Are we going to ask people returning from pretty much anywhere to self-isolate? You know, we talk about Italy, but there are places in the US who are having big epidemics that are just on the cusp of starting now as well. We know that community transmission is taking place in Britain. They've been testing very, very broadly. So they're slightly ahead of the curve in understanding that they have a lot of community transmission taking place. But it's not just about where are the epidemics taking place. It's where's the next epidemic about to take place.
And how long is it likely to go on? Because if I understood what was said by the senior medical expert who was before a Commons Health Committee yesterday, that there'll be a very intense period of about 7 to 9 weeks.
Yes, I think that's it. Depending on what measures we take in place to control the spread of the virus. So Wuhan was able to bring back the spread of the virus and to limit transmission. But as we've seen, those were pretty extreme measures. What measures are we prepared to put in place? The spread within Italy isn't really slowing down. They are putting measures in place, but they've been quite slow in making some decisions. Mm.
And coming back to yourself, Carmen, just see one of our listeners saying, Sean, if flights are banned from Northern Italy, people will simply fly in via London, Paris, Schiphol, etc., as I did myself 2 weeks ago, says Robert. But I suppose your point is make it harder for people. That's
Absolutely.
All about slowing it down.
Absolutely. I mean, you won't prevent all the cases. We are trying to slow this down because we want to try and contain it as much as possible and not have a peak of an influx of affected patients, because we can't cope with that. We're going to have to cope with what comes at us. If we can slow it down, get fewer patients, get half the number of sick patients, then we'll be able to look after those sick patients. Otherwise, we may not be able to do that.
My thanks to you both, and no doubt we'll be keeping an eye on this story and talking about it on other programmes and also later in this programme. We'll leave it there for now. My thanks to you, Kim Roberts, Assistant Professor of Virology at Trinity College, and also to Dr. Carmen Regan, Consultant, Senior Lecturer at RCSI and Consultant at the Coombe, speaking in a personal capacity. We'll take a break.
Today with Sean O'Rourke on RTE Radio 1.